No matter if points are gained or points are lost, there will be much to discuss. For analysis regarding tonight's Winnipeg Jets game, here are Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve post-game show starts now.
On December the 5th, Vancouver hired Bruce Boudreau as their head coach, replacing Travis Green. Since then, and including tonight's 5-1 victory over the woeful Winnipeg Jets, the Canucks are 11-4-3. The Winnipeg Jets hired Dave Lowry as their interim head coach on December the 17th, and after tonight's defeat, are now 4-6-2 with Lowry behind the bench. What could have been if the Jets organization, for once, had been proactive instead of reactive? Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. With Dave Manouk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, here to talk about tonight's latest defeat by the Winnipeg Jets at the hands of the Vancouver Canucks, the Jets dropping their sixth game in a row as a result of tonight's listless 5-1 effort. Gentlemen, I say good evening to you both, and I have to say I'm a little upset with you guys that I didn't get the memo that it was Blue Hoodie Night here on the Illegal Curve post-game show.
Yeah, Blue Hoodie Night. It's a new initiative that Dave and I started. And we purposely didn't email you the memo, though, Drew. But, you know, you just called it listless tonight. Like, look, you've got Spencer Martin in net for the Canucks. And he's actually played well with, you know, Thatcher Demko out and other goaltenders out. Jaroslav Halak, is the other goalie that wasn't able to start tonight. And they're going to get healthier. But, look, this is a game in which you had to get the win. And tonight's effort just wasn't acceptable. And yeah, I mean, you know, Dylan Sandberg is out of the lineup. Johnny Kovacevic, really nice for him to get his first NHL game. Obviously, you know, Dave M's going to want to talk about that because he entered the arena with the family, or he saw the arena at Canada Life Center. But this was just a putrid hockey game. I think that, you know, this should be called the Illegal Curve therapy show, not the Illegal Curve post-game show, because
the illegal curve therapy session.
Well, like, the Jets are just quickly fading away from the playoff conversation. Like, I'm not going to go as far as to say that, you know, it's over, because we're only at the halfway point of the season.
I'll say it's
getting over. Close. It's getting close to that right now. And, you know, look at Vancouver. You mentioned it, Drew, like, since Bruce Boudreau took over, you know, they've been playing some good hockey, maybe not, you know, so much over the last, you know, 3 or 4 games. But I mean, look at, you know, JT Miller, you know, for those who have been following what's happening in Vancouver, you know, his name has been bandied about in trade rumors. So what does he do? He goes out, he scores a hat trick and puts out a 4-point performance, right? So JT Miller was a huge thorn in the side, blocking shots on the penalty kill. Like, he was an absolute beast. And why wouldn't you expect that? He's their leading scorer, right? Like, the Canucks don't have a lot of talented players, but he's definitely one of them, right? Like, Elias Pettersson, obviously, you know, popped in a goal in the third period. He's arguably their most skilled player. You know, Brock Besser. Like, they've got some good hockey players on their team. But, like, this Canucks team, it wasn't too long ago, like, basically prior to Bruce Boudreau taking over for Travis Green, Dave, that the Canucks were a bit of a laughing stock, right? Like, they were a bottom 10 team in the league. And now they're actually in the playoff race with the Jets, now 2 points ahead of the Jets, right? So, Tonight's performance was just unacceptable, Drew.
They might be close to each other in the standings, and they are. But if you had to say which of these two teams, if you only had to pick one, if you could only pick one that's in the playoff race, Dave M., it's the Vancouver Canucks by a country mile. This Winnipeg Jets team, I went back and looked, just, you know, because, well, there was nothing else to do during that third period, or really the vast majority of the game. You know, since the 9-3-3 start, this team is in the bottom five of the NHL. They're closer to being in the conversation with the Montreal Canadiens, the Philadelphia Flyers, you know, the worst of the worst this year. That's where the Jets have been since the 9-3-3 start. That was so long ago, it might as well not have happened. That's how bad this team has been. I mean, I'm willing to listen to arguments if this was the worst game on home ice this year, or if it was the Buffalo game that was on home ice, or the Arizona game. But, you know, when they replaced Paul Maurice, things were supposed to get better. And they did very briefly 4-1-1 under Dave Lowry for a short period of time. But clearly, whatever dead cat bounce they got, that bounce is now done. This Jets team is this whole organization right now. At the NHL level is in complete and total disarray, in my opinion, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it starts with goaltending, and I think it's rather inexplicable the way they've run Connor Hellebuck, and I know it hasn't been overly taxing on him, but he just doesn't look like the Connor Hellebuck we're used to seeing. 13 straight starts for him, mm-hmm. most likely. I mean, you're putting him in a position now. You've got an afternoon game on Saturday. You can put Eric Comrie in the net on Saturday afternoon. Probably not. So you're going to go back with Connor Hellebuck. Then you don't play again. You have a day off on Sunday, practice on Monday, and then you play Tuesday night in Philly. And then you have the All-Star break. And so then it's a week between games. So then you're going to use Connor Hellebuck again on the 8th, I think it is, when they play the Minnesota Wild. Then they have a weekend series. I think it's a Friday, Saturday, or a Saturday, Sunday, where they play Dallas and Nashville. I think the 11th and 12th. So the first game Eric Comrie in theory could get is the 12th against Nashville, which would mean he would be 2 months between starts. I am actually curious, and I was actually going to ask, I'm more curious to see, I don't know if they're allowed to because of the All-Star break and these guys, it's mandated time off. I'm wondering if they're even going to try and get him to do like a conditioning stint with the Moose during the 4-5 that All-Star weekend, when the Moose are playing Texas, because otherwise Eric Comrie won't have played at all, at least if they can send him down on a conditioning assignment, get him a game in with Texas. Obviously, the caveat to that would be if they don't use him in the next two games. If they use him in the next two games, it's not as big a deal. I could still see him doing it, but that's just one of my thoughts was because right now Connor Hellebuck doesn't look like the Connor Hellebuck we're used to seeing. The team itself has problems, and I don't pin this all on Connor Hellebuck. But, you know, I think we've seen it a lot of times, you know, in saves that are routine for him generally, and that he's just not making them. So he's not playing his best. The team isn't playing their best. You're missing the loss of Josh Morrissey is massive. And I'm not here to make excuses for the Jets, because as I've talked about numerous times on this show and online, like the Moose have lost player after player after player and they keep winning. So, you know, it's not impossible to go up against a better team and come out victorious if you play, systematically right, if you do that.
The problems are systemic with the Jets. Systematically would be the way they'd want to play.
So that is why you can't, I mean, there's no greater example, right, than literally across the hall at a Moose team that does what, and I jokingly said this on Twitter at the end of the game, I said, I think it's time that the Jets come and watch a Moose game to see how a team plays, because those guys do. And the Jets just, it looks like a bunch of individuals standing around waiting for things to happen and not making anything happen. And so, yeah, it's certainly a disappointing effort. And one of those things that we've talked about with the Moose and, you know, this is going to bleed into becoming a Manuk Moose minute, but you know, it was interesting just to see all the guys, like obviously I was in the press box tonight, all the guys who were there to watch, you know, Johnny Kovacevic make his NHL debut. There were, I would say, at least 12 Jets Moose guys who were in the press box watching him and kind of cheering him on and that sort of thing. So, you know, you see that sort of relationship that these guys have, and you can see why they're able to have success on the ice because of the way they are. I don't know. We're just not seeing it with the Jets, whether it's, I mean, not necessarily off the ice, but what we're seeing right now on the ice is not a very good example from what we're seeing in the AHL.
Look, I mean, tonight's effort, and we'll get into the details of the game, but I mean, you know, we know that there's more than just the game to talk about tonight, in that this team right now has no identity. The team doesn't have a recipe for success. Every team in the NHL, every professional sports team has a recipe for success. We are good at X, Y, and Z. If we execute X, Y, and Z, we give ourselves a chance to win. Doesn't necessarily mean you're always going to win, but you give yourself a chance. I don't know what X, Y, and Z are for the Winnipeg Jets. And we've touched on that in the course of this losing streak. But tonight, I think, exemplified that as much as anything else. They were disinterested for a lot of the game, I thought. They were, as Dave just alluded to, they were five men out there playing individually, not as a unit, oftentimes, and for the most part. To me, you know, when Paul Maurice was dismissed and Dave Lowry came in as head coach, you wanted to know what was going to change. And there was a comment up on the screen just a bit ago, there you go, from Daryl, saying the Jets had nothing but time to practice and get on the same page. Somehow we ended up with this train wreck instead. And Daryl's right, because they practiced, and I honestly don't know what they practiced. What did they want to start achieving? Was their goal, when Dave Lowry had all that time, was the goal to become a team that gets to the net harder and prevents net front action more? Based on his commentary, that would, to me, would be what they were striving for. Well, this team is just as much of a perimeter team as they have been. There's no fight. There's no drive. I was texting with somebody in the game tonight, during the game tonight. The Jets team has to be the easiest team to play against in the NHL. They don't hit anybody. I think they ended up with 12 body checks on the night. But, you know, how many of those hits were significant? They had 7 hits, according to the stat keepers, after 40 minutes. And I remind everyone that when you're on home ice, you usually get the benefit of the doubt whether or not it's actually a hit or not. So they don't hit anybody. They're down 4-1, and then Adam Lowry drops the gloves with Luke Shen. Talk about the definition of meaningless. I mean, you know, just top to bottom tonight, it was a team filled with rot more than anything, would be how I would describe it, Ezzy.
Yeah, well, that's pretty harsh. But I mean, right now, when you've lost 6 games in a row and you lose 5-1 to the Canucks, I think you kind of have to be a little bit harsh, right? And you know, going back to what Dave was, I want to go back to what Dave was saying about Hellebuck, because I think it's an interesting point that Dave makes. Like, I do think, you know, he's off, and you could make the argument that, you know, Hellebuck, his games have been spaced out, right? Like, now we're back into a regular schedule where the Jets have, you know, a game every 2 nights and everything like that. But you know, the goals that he let in, right? Like the first goal, that's a nice kind of tic-tac-toe passing play, right? For those who didn't see it, or just to refresh everybody's mind, that was the tic-tac-toe power play goal. The first goal that JT Miller scored, he scored a hat trick, right? So the second goal is the JT Miller shot from, it would be on Hellebuck's right side that it goes in, his blocker side. And to me, that's a nicely placed shot by JT Miller. But it's a shot in which it's a save that Hellebuck can definitely make. The third goal is between the five hole, and it's not just, you know, where the shots are placed and that those are saves that Hellebuck can make. It's also how easy the Canucks just went into the zone. Like the third goal, you know, I just watched the replay. Like, you know, step over the blue line, Ekman, you know, just JT Miller walks right in, shoots. Jets defensemen are backing up. Like, you hear the cliche, like, you know, make sure that the gaps are tight and everything like that. Like this is just too easy right now for other teams, you know, that are playing the Jets, whether it's coming into Canada Life Center or it's, you know, on this past road trip where obviously the Jets, you know, only picked up 2 of a possible 8 points. Like, just right now. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of individual play. I actually thought Scheifele, Kopp, and Wheeler were pretty good early on in this game. Right. And of course, you know, Kopp hits the crossbar, and then just moments later, you know, JT Miller scores what turns out to be the eventual game winner. Right. So
the 2-1 goal was the game winner.
Pardon me. Yeah. That was the 2-1 goal. Right.
Right.
That after the Kopp crossbar. That was Kopp, the 2-1 goal.
Crossbar was the 3-1
goal. Oh, sorry. Pardon me.
That was right. The bad 5-hole goal is what it was there. But right. your point is
Kopp after. Could have tied the game up. Instead of putting the Jets up 2-1, that would have tied the game up. You're right.
Exactly.
So, right. So the point is, it seems like every time the Jets have something like that happen, then the other team comes back and scores a goal, right? So, you know, another key point of the game was in the second period. I forget who I'd have to go back and look at who took the penalty kind of around the midway point of the second period. And the Jets had a power play, and Wheeler found
back to back. It was there were the two penalties, Matthew Highmore and then Tyler Myers back to back.
There you go. I think it was after, I think it was the Jets' second power play of the second period after the Myers penalty, where if you remember, Wheeler finds Scheifele, kind of what we've seen cross seam, and Scheifele just whiffs on it, right? Like something that you're just, you're expecting at the very least Scheifele to get, you know, some good wood on it and get a good scoring chance. And to me, that's just kind of sums up the way the Jets are playing right now. Like, yeah, they're getting good looks, but they're not finishing, right? Like they scored one goal tonight, guys, on a goalie that, yeah, he's a Colorado, you know, draft pick, and but he's played less than 10 NHL games.
This was his first win in the NHL.
Well, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not taking anything away from Spencer Martin. That's not what I'm doing. But you have to factor, like Dave talks about, you know, I agree. Josh Morrissey's your best defenseman. That's a huge loss. Nikolaj Ehlers is on injured reserve right now. I mean, that's a huge loss. But Vancouver's down to their fourth string goalie. Like, so, and you're at home, and this is like, as Weber put it, you know, with Sean Reynolds on his piece for Sportsnet, you know, today, like this is the, and that was not a desperate enough effort from the Jets tonight. So, you know, we can talk about the goals and we can go over the goals and everything that the Jets aren't doing right now, or what the Jets are doing right. There's definitely not enough right now. When you lose six games in a row, like how much really can you be doing right? Especially when a lot of these games are not close. Like it's not like, yeah, sure, like a few games on the road trip were close, but it's just not good enough right now. And even though the Jets are still in the playoff race, the best that they're going to do right now, guys, 40 games into the season, is a wild card spot, because they're not catching the top four teams in the Central Division. It's just not going to happen. You're not catching Colorado. You're not catching St. Louis. You're not catching Minnesota. When you're 11 or 12 points behind a team right now, it's just not going to happen. You basically, to do that, you're going to have to win 12 games or 14 games in a row. So it's very bleak right now. But, I mean, the Jets do control their own destiny. But, I mean, it seems like we keep doing these post-game shows and we keep saying the exact same things and nothing changes.
Well, it's not that – I mean – You talk about desperation, and you talk, and everybody knew the Jets should be desperate. You've lost five in a row. I mean, you know, it's not like you're okay, you know, with your desperation level until you lose eight in a row. Most teams in the NHL don't lose five games in a row. I mean, what the Philadelphia Flyers have done, losing 10 straight games twice already this year, is quite remarkable. So the Jets come into tonight's game, and you're playing a Vancouver Canucks team that's just behind you in the standings. You know that you need a win. You know that you need to be desperate. There was not 1 ounce of desperation in their game. And, you know, it's one thing to be, you know, you're down 3-1 after 40 minutes. And sure, maybe you deserved better. Maybe it should have been tied up at 2-2 instead of being 3-1 for Vancouver after you had those couple of power play opportunities and you didn't get anything going. But you get started in the third period, and you got Dubois in the penalty box a minute into the third period, and he's been your best player this year, so I'm not going to put the blame on Dubois' shoulders.
I thought that was a weak call, by the way. Dubois coughed the puck up, but I thought he made a nice play. And I agree. Yeah. Kevin Sawyer didn't like it either. I agree with him on that one.
Kevin Sawyer, I mean, I understand what Kevin's job is, and I'm not going to, you know, his job is to wear rose-colored glasses, but he's really wearing rose-colored glasses. But, you know, we're not here to talk about Kevin, you know, or anything like that. But, you know, it takes the Canucks all of 7 seconds, Dave, to score on their power play to start the third period and really effectively end the game at that point in time. Meanwhile, the Jets have back-to-back power play opportunities in the second period in an effort to tie the game, and they can't capitalize. So, you know, that goal, giving up that goal in that, you know, start the third period is just a sign of a team that's just not that interested in winning games, I believe. Not that interested in fighting through the adversity, because there's no question they are facing adversity, but where's the fight? Where's the determination? Where's the insistence that it's not going to beat you down? That's what we're not seeing.
Yeah, I mean, do I question their desire to win? Not really. I mean, I don't think that their effort is as significant as it needs to be, and I think ultimately, like I said, and I don't want to sound like a broken record here, but I think it comes down to you know, hockey is a team game. And I think one of the comments in the, you know, in the chat said that, you know, this isn't just about pinning the blame on one player. And the beauty of this Jets team right now is that you can pin it on a lot of guys. Like, this is not just on one individual player, but, you know, I mean, a lot of curious decisions. I mean, I think I was looking at the ice time after 40, and I think the fourth line it played, I think Jansen Harkins' minutes were 2:33 or something like that. I don't know where he finished in the end, but
Jansen Harkins finished at 9:34 in tonight's game.
Okay, well, they were extraordinary. Maybe at one point in the second, they were, I think he had played like 2:33 or something like that. It was low because I took note of it. I thought, I actually said to someone in the press box, I said, did he do something? Like, did I miss a play that he made a mistake on? That there's, I know you're chasing the game and you're trying to get back into it, but
he had two shifts in the second period for a minute and 6 seconds after having four shifts in the first period at 2:05. So yeah, to your point, he paid after 40 minutes, a guy who is usually a heart and soul kind of guy, pardon me, played 3:11.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and like, it just seemed like there was a little bit of, I don't know, it just wasn't going well, right? And you thought to yourself, okay, look, the Canucks score on that power play to open up the game, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, I mean, this is Vancouver. They're not playing Colorado, a Panthers team. You're not expecting it to be. I mean, it was a terrible first period for both teams. It was incredibly boring. You know, the Kopp goal and the Miller goal notwithstanding. I mean, really, it was, I think I jokingly said on Twitter, like, you know, that was the first period of hockey, but that's about it. Like, it was not, it was nothing to write home about. So I think the most exciting thing was Celtie running up and down the aisles. But other than that, there wasn't really a lot of things that you were going on that you're thinking, this is particularly entertaining. And you're thinking, dear Lord, do I have to watch another 40 minutes of this? But anywho, the reality is that you know, picked up a little bit. The Jets just, like, ultimately it comes down to the same thing, right? We sound like a broken record. And look, you don't gloss over the fact that you're missing Nikolai Ehlers, who's your most dynamic winger, essentially. You know, you're not glossing over the fact you're missing Josh Morrissey. I mean, but I mean, I think it comes back to my original point, which was that I think Connor Hellebuck just doesn't look like Connor Hellebuck. And I'm not going to put it all on him, because I think the defense isn't making plays that they need to. I mean, Neil Pionk screened him on, was it the
third goal
where, yeah. I mean, Pionk is just right, takes away his eyes and then doesn't block the shot. So he doesn't take away, doesn't block. I mean, if you're going to screen your goaltender, at least you have to block the shot as it's coming in. He does neither, or he does one, doesn't do the other. And so in the end, it goes through Pionk and then through Hellebuck. So, you know, it's just a series of curious decisions from this coaching staff. Like I said, not choosing to use Eric Comrie. They could have used Mikael Burden on Sunday. I know they were desperate for a win against the Penguins, but, you know, you're using up Connor Hellebuck, and he just doesn't seem to have, you know, what it is that he usually has. So, like I said, I think there's a, and even just the curiosity of switching the D pairs. Like, I understand that he didn't want Heinola and Kovacevic to be, you know, looks, for lack of a better term, picked on. So he didn't really use them as a third pairing. He essentially would have Kovacevic with, like, Dylan, and then you have Heinola with Schmidt, or you'd have, you know, one of them with Beaulieu. Like, it was the D pairings. Like, we were sitting in the press box and Mike McIntyre of the Free Press was trying to figure it all out. And I said, Mike, stop, you're wasting your time, because the D pairs they've changed 17 times. And Lowry alluded to that in the availability today. He essentially said, you know, they're going to start together, but they're going to play a lot of guys. So even that, I don't understand, right? You've got a pair of guys in Kovacevic and Heinola who have, you know, Kovacevic is in a third-year pro. He's not like a wet-behind-the-ears guy who's never played, you know, pro hockey. Heinola's played a lot of games at the pro level, and they've paired up 8 times. Literally less than 3 weeks ago was their last time they were paired up for the Manitoba Moose. So, you know, the lack of trust in them. I mean, and, you know, going back to the original point, you're not playing against the upper echelon team. You're playing against the Vancouver Canucks, and you control the matchups. You control the lines. So, mm-hmm. Like, if you're worried about Kovacevic and Heinola, I don't know. I just thought it was too cute by a lot, and I think it threw things off, because it really did seem to throw off the the, I don't want to say chemistry, but it did seem to throw things off throughout the course, at least in the first period for me.
I think as a head coach, what you're saying by doing that, and I agree with your befuddlement about that decision, Dave, I think what you're saying as a head coach is, you know, before the game starts, I don't trust these guys. And there's no reason to do that before the game starts. You know, you might be thinking that. You might not love that you have to play it, and I get that because, you know, you're without Josh Morrissey. You're now without Dylan Sandberg. You're without Logan Stanley. You're without Dylan DeMello. But you need to put on the good face and say to Heinola and Kovacevic, yeah, I trust you guys. Go out there. You guys are going to be fine. Again, you're playing the Vancouver Canucks. You're not playing a juggernaut. You're not playing the Colorado Avalanche. You're playing the Vancouver Canucks. You can trust them, or at least fake that you trust them for the first period. And if all hell breaks loose and things don't go your way, then you can adjust on the fly, Ezzy. But I agree. It's just odd decision-making. And I get that you're playing, you know, that your defense is riddled with injuries right now, but you know, TDB too damn bad. Every team goes through it, put on a good face on it and go out there and do what you're going to need to do to get a victory. Don't basically say you don't have faith in the guys before the game starts.
Well, I don't know if that's the case. I mean,
that's my interpretation of it by saying you're not going to play them together. And Dave articulated how he was just constantly sort of shuffling his defense and not allowing anyone to get comfortable. That's my interpretation of it. You, by all means, can have a different interpretation, and the people in the chat can say that I'm a moron because it's quite possible.
Nobody's saying you're a moron, Drew. Just relax. Well,
they might be.
I think that when you consider everything, like, you can't ignore the fact that you have two young defensemen. Like, anybody that was watching, especially the first period, I mean, it was just a group that looked a little bit chaotic in their own zone. And yeah, I would agree with Dave in terms of, you know, putting Heinola and Kovacevic together on the third pair. But I mean, look, guys, this is the situation that they're in right now. Like, we often talk about the Moose and how they've had just a crazy amount, an influx of, you know, different players signing guys to basically replace the guys that are either on the taxi squad or are now up with the Jets, right? Like, Leon Gavanke is now up with the Jets or the taxi squad or whatever, right? So, like, it's just been a never ending, like, just a constant rotation of guys in and out of the lineup, and they keep winning, and they're winning against really good American Hockey League teams, Chicago Wolves, right? So if you've been following what the Moose are doing, they're obviously not using, you know, guys out of the lineup. So you have to, you know, you have to find ways to win games, even though it's a cliche, with the guys that you have in the lineup. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, you're not going to necessarily put it on, you know, whether it's a Scheifele, like Connor had ended up with 5 shots on net. I thought he had much more than that. Like, he had some really good looks, but you're not finishing and you're not getting the results. So ultimately, you know, these guys that get paid the big bucks on this team, you know, have to be better, right? Like, it's kind of as simple as that right now. Like, you just have to find a way to win games. Like, you have to be more desperate. Like, you have to score, you know, more power play on your more power play opportunities. Like, the Jets power play has been good lately, but it's just like, it seems like every game we're just finding, you know, another reason, another excuse why the Jets keep losing these games. And yeah, I mean, the Canucks are, you know, still riding that Bruce Boudreau, you know, new hire wave. But I mean, look at guys, like, you know, at the beginning of the season, we were talking about the Jets, you know, definitely being a top 10 team, being a Stanley Cup contender. Like, not only are the Jets not a Stanley Cup contender right now, as Drew mentioned, they're a bottom 10 team in the league since, you know, what are we talking about? Mid-November, you know, after the kind of 15-game mark of the season. So, yeah. I mean, it's just you can't make any more excuses. The losses keep piling up. They just keep losing. And, you know, it's just it's tough to really find the silver lining. Like, I'm a glass half full guy. You guys know that. But, you know, what you're seeing from this Jets team over the last couple of weeks, it's really concerning. And you wonder, like, you know, if you do lose a couple more games, like, you're basically out of the playoff picture and you're still only in, you know, end of January here.
Yeah, well, there's still 42 games left to go in the season. And I think that's, you know, that's, I think, a lot of people's, what their problem is or what they're concerned about is, why is there any change on the horizon to the performance we've seen as of late? And I don't know why anyone would think that there's better times ahead from what you've seen. I mean, this isn't, the head coach, the previous head coach is gone. They're not going to get rid of Dave Lowry, 20 games into his stint as the interim head coach. And then that leaves the only other thing to be a change to the roster and a change to the players. Well, the general manager doesn't do anything mid-season, under basically any circumstances.
Well, especially when you're up against the salary cap and you have, how many players are out of the lineup right now, Drew. Right. So I agree. I don't see any moves, maybe it's a minor move, but I definitely don't see any major moves coming anytime soon.
And that's the problem. I mean, that's the problem because it's not, it's not the depth guys. I mean, the depth guys haven't been good or haven't been, they've been average at best, but they're the depth guys. The roster was built by the general manager and it's a very top heavy roster. Well, guess what? The guys that he's built with this top heavy roster are the ones who aren't performing. And, we'll get to it in the second half of the show after the break. A lot of the back and forth and Blake Wheeler with some interesting comments and things of that nature. So stay with us for those. But that's just it. I just don't see what's going to push them through this 6-game losing streak. The team is the team. Ehlers is probably at best a few weeks away. Josh Morrissey, when he returns from the COVID list, that'll help things on the back end. But, it's the scoring. The team can't score, guys. If you told me that a team that on paper has this level of firepower and they can't score, I mean, I don't know how that changes. I don't know why they're all of a sudden going to be able to flip that switch.
That was a good snap.
To me, thank you. That was a pretty decent snap.
I can't snap, so I appreciate that.
Really, I can't whistle.
I can't whistle either. I can't do anything, Drew. I'm one-dimensional. All I can do is eat.
That's a good dimension, though. My wife's trying to teach our kids how to whistle, and it's I'm of no help in that instance. I can't whistle, but I can get a good loud snap going. If the microphone, it's a crisp snap. There's no question about that, Dave. But going back to the non-snapping portion of my rant, I just don't see what's going to push them through this. I don't see where that next where the solution is, because I know it's an internal solution. But it's been like this.
It's got to be the leadership group, Dave. It has to be Scheifele and Wheeler. It has to be, especially with Ehlers out.
Look, I think Drew's right in the sense that there's no question this team has. We've been talking about it for a while now. They have to score. I mean, you can't win a hockey game 1-0. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you're not scoring, that's a big problem. And you're not getting the saves. You're not scoring. The defense is playing loose. You got a lot of problems. You got to tighten things up. Now you could say, well, if they could tighten up defensively, eventually they may get opportunities to score some goals. That's possible. But I'm telling you right now, it's been a problem for a while. You've got the majority of the scoring coming from Pierre-Luc Dubois and Kyle Connor. Mm-hmm. And then it just falls off from there. And it falls off. And
I throw a cop in there too.
Yeah, Andrew Kopp. Yeah, I mean, he's got 12 goals, right? So he's doing okay. But the problem is, I just look at this team and if it was distributed even more evenly, but you're not getting it. Now, I'm not going to blame Jansen Harkins, Evgeny Svechnikov, and
Christian Vesalainen
or Austin Pagansky.
Yeah.
But especially the fourth line, because they're not playing any minutes. So, I mean, you're not going to sit there and shit on them, because the reality is they don't have the ice time to justify it. But if you're giving the big dogs the ice time and they're not producing, it's on them. And look, when you make the big money and you earn the big ice time, I don't know if you've earned it, but you're getting the big ice time, I should say, then you have to produce. And so it's insufficient. And as you said, Drew, I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois has had a phenomenal season for the Winnipeg Jets. So you're not, guy makes one mistake that ends up in the back of the net because of the power play. It's not you're not going to rip him up for it. But the Jets aren't scoring. And so if you're not going to score goals in the National Hockey League, well, it's very difficult to win games. And so, it's all around, right? It's not just, I've been saying this for a while now, it's not just one problem. Defensively, this team isn't good. In goal, this team isn't good. And their forwards, for the most part, haven't been good enough. And if you're not going to get that turned around, and maybe it requires some ingenuity, some, you know, changing things up by Dave Lowry, maybe, you know, make Adam Lowry your fourth line center, maybe make Paul Stastny your third line center.
Yeah.
Or Andrew Copp.
It's time to think outside the box, not be Paul Maurice the Redux.
Well, yeah, and it's just you're just doing the exact same thing we've seen forever, which is rely on your top two lines. You hope they'll score. You have a third line that'll tread water and hold against, you know, maybe they'll be used in a shutdown role. And your fourth line is a complete waste of time. Mm-hmm. So you may as well just be dressing 9 forwards and not 12.
Absolutely right. Let's go to break. When we come back, much more on tonight's Jets loss to the Vancouver Canucks. We'll read you some of the post-game comments that came from Blake Wheeler and from Dave Lowry. Interesting comments from both of them. More of your comments and more analysis as well. And of course, the tough duck, hardest hitting comment still to come here on the Illegal Curve post-game show. Smash the like button while we go to break. That's what we ask from you. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve post-game show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms.
Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the biggest acts and all the up-and-comers. They've all made their mark at Rumors Comedy Club, North America's longest-running independent comedy club. Rumors has kept Winnipeg laughing for over 25 years. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party, even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
He winds up. Oh, looks like Ezzy took that one right in the choppers.
A blistering fast puck hurts like H-E double hockey sticks. That's why I let the pros at Linden Market Dental Center turn my yow into
wow.
Get your brilliant smile back with state-of-the-art restorative and cosmetic dentistry from real pros.
And remember, always wear a mouth guard.
Now that's solid on ice advice. Learn more at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Creating smiles for life.
Whoa, Ezzy, everything okay? You look stressed.
Of course I'm stressed. We're moving, the house is upside down, the kids failed miserably at packing the fine china, and my life is in chaos. Chaos.
Yes, that does sound like a problem.
What am I going to do?
Ezzy, relax. Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage is the answer. With 60 years of experience in moving Manitobans and a track record of exemplary customer service, one call to Rollies and your stress is gone. No job is too big or too small. Just visit Rollies.com and they will take it from there.
Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Rollies Transfer Moving and Storage, online at Rollies.com.
Hey boys, finding parking on game day shouldn't take longer than the Manuk minute.
It shouldn't take longer than 1 minute?
Yeah, less than a minute? I spend at least 20 driving around to find street parking. Or if I'm in a rush to the game, I'll shovel out 20 at a parkade.
You're both doing it wrong. There's this app called GridPark. It lets you find and pre-book your parking spot on game days. And you can reserve your spot up to 1 month in advance. And guess how much you'll pay?
Tell me, Dave. You know I love a deal.
Ezzy, $5.
Come on, $5?
Yeah, and it's just 2 blocks from the arena.
The GridPark app?
Yep, spelled G-R-Y-D Park. And you know what else?
There's more?
Our listeners get their first park free with the code FIRSTPARK.
Wow, so they just download the GridPark app and pre-book their next game day spot for free?
Yeah, you got it, Ez. Promo code FIRSTPARK, only on the GridPark app.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
It's watching the game with friends, pizza night with the family, or date night for two. This holiday season, give the gift of special occasions. Get a free $10 promo card when you buy a $50 gift card from Boston Pizza. Because nobody re-gifts pizza.
For 3 generations and over 80 years, Tough Duck has been making apparel that works and plays as hard as the people who wear it. From jackets to work boots and everything in between, Tough Duck's clothing can handle the harshest environments, even the Illegal Curve hockey show.
Work to live, live to play. Visit toughduck.com.
20 minutes after the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Thursday night, we're with you for tonight's therapy session, talking about the Jets' defeat at the hands of the Vancouver Canucks.
Talk to Dr. Mindell.
That's right. I'm not a doctor, but I'll take a look at the hands of the Vancouver Canucks by a 5-1 margin. The Jets losers of 6 games in a row. When asked by Mike.
Hold on. Shout out to. I got to give Mal Paris a little shout out. Shout out to Grade 9 Drama, Garden City Collegiate.
Yeah, but were you actually ever in any performances BCC? Or anything like that?
Absolutely not.
I was once in a. I was in a TV commercial once, and I was also in a musical in grade 6.
I once sang "The Girl Is Mine," but with Paul McCartney, Michael Jackson song.
And Drew, don't forget when you also had the breakaway at a Jets game. Jets 1.0. Don't forget about that.
I have that video handy.
What was that called? Was that wasn't
Top
called
Shots? The community. It was called Top the Community Club Showdown. To be perfectly accurate, you know, I don't want to tell
three skaters, right? Three skaters and a goalie.
Two skaters, three shots each, and a goalie. Yeah. And I was selected randomly. I don't even know how I was selected. And my only problem in doing that, despite a clear lack of skill, was that it was my second time ever on skates. So I couldn't really skate.
I would spin it the other way and say that that's very impressive, actually.
Well, I appreciate your...
That you were in that stage, right? Like your Winnipeg Arena in front of 15,000 people, only the second time on skates, and you scored, right?
I did not score, in fact.
Oh, I thought you did.
No, I did not. It was Gretzky's first game back in Winnipeg after he was traded to Los Angeles. So, yes, there was a large crowd in attendance at the old Winnipeg Arena for that. And we have the video, and maybe one day I'll play it on the show. Because I haven't quite humiliated myself on a regular basis. all you hear on the video is my father, who's filming the whole thing, laughing hysterically at my public embarrassment. So that's one of the great shames of my life, but not really a shame.
No, it's not a shame.
It's a classic video.
It's awesome.
That one day I'll share on the show here. And if anybody ever wants to find the Sand Stores commercial that I was in when I was in grade 5, maybe grade
Sand.
6, you can also
two A's, right? Sand with two A's.
Yeah. Sand with two A's, SAAN. Also available somewhere, I'm sure, on the internet so that somebody else can find. In any event, what I was
shout out to Wolco as well.
Except Sand Stores was a local company. Wolco was a national chain. Yeah. Sand Stores was local. Mike McIntyre asked Blake Wheeler, if the Jets are a fragile bunch after tonight's loss. Here was Blake Wheeler's response. Quote, "I would say that this team has dealt with the most adversity of any team I've played on in 14 years. So I would actually completely say the opposite about this group. Yeah, wins and losses aren't going our way right now, but we've dealt with a lot. So we can go through a list and those would be labeled excuses. And I'm not in a real big hurry to start using excuses. But fragile is not a word I would use to describe this group. We've had to deal with a lot this year. With all due respect to the Jets captain, when they play like they played, after giving up that third goal, that goal that made it 3-1, and then they didn't show any fight for the remainder of the game, yeah, that's fragility. And I know I don't really expect Blake Wheeler to come out and necessarily agree with Mike's premise, but I would say Mike is 100% right. This Jets team is a fragile team right now. I also don't know what he's talking about, the most adversity of any team he's played on in 14 years. That, to me, is also a bit of an outlandish statement, but forgetting about that, they are fragile.
Yeah, I don't know. And the thing is, guys, like they faced a lot of adversity last year, right? Like you go back to the shortened 56-game season, and you can make the argument that, that was quite a bit, right? Like, I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on off the ice, right? Like, I mean, starting with line A for Dubois early on, right? Back in, it was a year ago last week, right? So, I mean, last year there was quite a bit of adversity. And this year there has been a lot of adversity. And Wheeler himself, right, dealt with COVID. Scheifele dealt with COVID when most of the team wasn't. And now, I mean, everybody is dealing with COVID. I mean, I don't mean on the Jets. I mean, like, everybody in the world is dealing with COVID, right? So, Yeah, I mean, that might be the case for him personally. But again, like, this is a team that has Stanley Cup aspirations, right? Like, we go back, like, we're talking about a Jets team right now that's lost six games in a row that is falling out of the wild card race. And that's what I think, you know, going back to, you know, before the break, what we were talking about with, you know, what's wrong with this team and how they're not scoring goals, Hellebuck struggling, Hellebuck's playing too much. Like, these guys have to get out of this or they're not even going to make the playoffs. And then I think, yeah, you're going to see major moves. I'm not saying with certainty that that's going to happen, but, you know, you look at, you know, Andrew Kopp is coming up for contract. Pierre-Luc Dubois is coming up for contract. And it's going to be, these are big boy contracts. These aren't going to be, there's not going to be another 1 or 2 year. This isn't a bridge deal situation. This is like, you're trying to lock up Pierre-Luc Dubois long-term, and Andrew Kopp's probably going to get 4 year deal, 5 year deal, maybe a 6 year, like Andrew Kopp's not going to sign another 1 year deal. So the point is that, you know, there's big decisions to be made, right? When you consider a guy like Paul Stastny, he's on a 1 year deal. So, I mean, there's a lot at stake here. This is not, you can't just say, at this point in the season, you can't say, you know, even though we're not winning, you know, I think I like the opportunities we're getting and things of that nature. Like, we talk about the Wheeler window. I mean, it's year one of the Wheeler window and it's not going very well.
No, look, in my perspective, Dave, if this team continues on this trajectory, yeah, first of all, anybody that's a UFA is quite likely or should be traded at the deadline, and that includes Andrew Kopp and that includes Paul Stastny. You know, there's no reason to hang on to them if this is what's going to happen after the deadline. I think Andrew Kopp is gone in the offseason anyways. I just don't see how the math works.
I don't know how you can say that with certainty, Drew. Like, I'm not saying that. It's possible, but
I don't say anything with certainty, as I say, I think, but more than that, if this is the trajectory that continues, you have to be talking about a full scale organizational reset, because you just mentioned the Wheeler window. Well, the way the roster is currently built, the way this team is currently built, you know, if they're towards the bottom of the NHL, then you have to be talking about a full scale rebuild of this team. And that's involving a changing of the core of this team. Now, you know, is Blake Wheeler's contract going anywhere? No, it's not, because nobody's going to trade for that contract. Mark Scheifele's contract is certainly tradable, you know, and we're probably getting a little ahead of ourselves, but you would think that it would result in a full scale reset of where this team is going to be for the next couple of years if this season continues on this trajectory, Dave.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the, I guess, the benefits of having a situation like this occur now. If you can get things turned around, then maybe you change your position and the planning that you have going into the trade deadline. And if it doesn't, if it does continue down this path, and if the wheels completely fall off, no pun intended, from this Jets team, well, then, I mean, yeah, you'd be rather silly based on, you know, your expectations to lose Andrew Kopp for nothing. I mean, you just can't afford to do that from a long-term stability of the franchise perspective. So, I mean, Andrew Kopp has a lot of value. He won't have any value, obviously, when he's a UFA and can sign wherever he wants. But, you know, right now, if you think that your contention window for this season, at least, is done, then you have to figure out what you're going to do with Andrew Kopp. You know, the other thing is you let the ELC on Cole Perfetti slide. He played his 10th game. I mean, sorry, it's no longer. He's now
burned
a year off his ELC. So, because today he played in his 10th game. So, I mean, clearly that's a decision that the organization made, right? That's a decision that they're moving forward with Cole Perfetti as part of the Winnipeg Jets organization for the near future, and without Nikolaj Ehlers, that decision makes a lot of sense. Cole Perfetti seems to be having some success with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Kyle Connor, of course. So, you know, there's a decision that they've made that says that they're probably not thinking about the future just yet, because if they were, they may have reconsidered that idea of allowing him to get to UFA 1 year sooner, right? So,
yeah, but you lose credibility. I mean, Cole Perfetti, you know,
They couldn't afford to do it. But I'm just saying that it still factors in. They still have to think about it, I would imagine, because it is a you know, you have to, you don't just, when you're a general manager, assistant general manager of a team, you don't just look at your team in this year's terms. You're looking down the line. And so you have to look at this Winnipeg Jets team and thinking to yourself, and I'm not ready to do that yet. I mean, this is game 40, right? There's still 42 games to go in the season. So you don't write off the season just yet. But at the same time, you have to start thinking to yourself, you know, you have to be pragmatic. You have to think, what is this team going to be able to do? Is this team going to be able to turn things around? You know, when will Nikolaj Ehlers be back? So Josh Morrissey, we know, is obviously he's COVID, so won't be gone too long. They may get him back maybe for the Flyers game. I'm not entirely certain about that timeline, but just before the Tuesday game. So in theory, he won't be available on the Saturday game against the Blues, but he could be available for the Tuesday game. Did I freeze or are you guys frozen?
No, you're fine. Keep going.
I feel like I'm frozen.
You're frozen maybe, but just keep talking. You're fine right now. Okay, forget it. Dave M's frozen, so we'll keep going on that. Look, there's just...
I'm frozen? Who's frozen here?
There's just not enough going right for this team.
I'm looking at you and Ez.
The Jets aren't doing enough to make themselves feel good about themselves. And that's, you know, part of it. It's a bit of a chicken and the egg argument, undoubtedly. You know, how do you get out of the doldrums that you're in when, you know, nothing you're doing is working? Well, you have to find some other things to do. To me, you know, when things aren't going well, you know, when you're just not being effective, the easiest change you can make is to start throwing your body around. And that, to me, is where the Jets need to start from. They need to start getting back to being a team that is not so simple to play against. They need to start throwing their body around. And I know they're not necessarily built that way, but you need to find a way in which you can do that, where you can just deliver some amount of body checks on every shift or every period that just reminds your opposition that you're not going to be, you know, you're not going to get walked over. Adam Lowry is never going to be a good goal scorer. He's just not. But Adam Lowry needs to go out there and he needs to have 5 or 6 or 7 body checks every single night to be an effective player for this team. He's a big boy. He needs to lean on his opposition, because if he doesn't do that and he doesn't have the goal scoring prowess, then he's just not an effective player for this team. He needs to be physical. Brendan Dillon needs to be more physical. Even Andrew Kopp needs to be more physical. And I know that his game has changed a little bit from, you know, now that he's playing in more of a scoring role, but there's no reason why he can't be physical at the same time. They need to go out there. Again, you know, we go back to a guy like Jansen Harkins. When Jansen Harkins plays, what does he do? He just goes and he throws his body around with a bit of reckless abandon. They need more of that, because they are just the easiest team to play against in the NHL. They're soft, and if you want to change your fortunes, start by becoming a harder team to play against.
And even, like, look at a guy like we've talked quite a bit since Austin Pagansky got the call up. Like, he's a guy that he's a prolific scorer. Like, you know, I go back to, you know, UND, national champion. Like, at the NHL level, though, you know, he can score, obviously, but he's a guy that knows that he has to be an energy guy. So what does he do? He's been throwing his weight around. He's been hitting. He's been doing whatever he can do to stick in the lineup, and he's been doing a good job. So you're right, Drew. It's not just Adam Lowry. It's not just Jansen Harkins. It's everybody. And you even saw Blake Wheeler throwing his weight a little around, but it's not enough. You haven't seen enough of this Jets team. You're seeing one period played a certain way and then another period. Like tonight, yeah, there were scoring chances, but it was just much too easy for the Canucks. Like, we talked about it on the second and third goal by JT Miller. I mean, it's just too easy for him to walk right in. Jets D backs up a little bit. And yeah, could Connor Hellebuck have saved them with the save, helped them out with the save? Sorry. Of course he could have. And we're not pinning it on Hellebuck again. Like, he didn't have a fantastic game. But, you know, he wasn't the main reason why that they lost. So yeah, Drew, I'm with you. Like, there is a bit of a lack of identity on this team. They are too easy to play against right now. But I still think, having said all that, and I agree with Dave, you can say whatever. I don't care what anybody says in the comments. Not having Ehlers and Morrissey at this point in the season. And again, we're not talking about an excuse, but you can't look at this in a vacuum and not factor that in, because they are dependent on those two players. Those are two key players. So what I'm saying is, even though all teams in the NHL right now are dealing with injuries, because the Jets are in this slide, it's like it compounds things, right? It's like when things are going bad, they go really bad. And that is what's happening right now. Like they just, they're having difficulty finding a way. And it almost looked like, guys, you know, in this game, like it's almost like they feel defeated. Like you watch these guys, and even Hellebuck, you know, when he let in the third goal by JT Miller, like, you know, you just, okay, have some water and yeah, let in another goal. This is Hellebuck we're talking about. Arguably the best goaltender in the world. This is a frustrated group. And it doesn't seem like they have the answers right now, but they better find the answers because as we talked about it, you know, you've got St. Louis, really good hockey team. It's been a bit of a nemesis for the Jets over the years, going back to that first round exit, right? Where the Jets could have easily won that series, 2019-20 season. And then you've got Philadelphia, who's a joke in the NHL right now. You got to win those games. We'll see if they do, but it's not looking good right now. And again, we try to be positive. Trust me, I always try to be positive. We've been doing this show for almost 13 years now. It's tough to be positive right now around this team.
Yeah, I don't usually have that same problem. I prefer to be negative, but that's just maybe my you got the rose-colored glasses. I got whatever, maybe the gray-colored glasses instead. But that's why we're the yin and the yang, and we work so well off of each other.
And Drew, I wouldn't be surprised if they beat St. Louis and if they beat Philadelphia, and then coming over the All-Star break, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they win, you know, 4 or 5 games in a row.
I would be. I'd be shocked.
Just you'd be lying if you said you've seen anything recently. I'm talking about the last 6 games, this losing streak. You'd be lying if you said you've seen anything that would make you think that the Jets are going to go on a five or six game winning streak, aside from the fact that they still have talent on paper to get this done. I mean, there's still enough talent on this roster that they should be better right now than the record is.
Well, I would certainly be shocked because they're not, you know, yes, on paper they should be better than their record is, but they're not playing like it. So you get what you deserve, Dave, and they deserve to lose. That's how they're playing. You know, when you don't put forth the requisite desire and effort and make your opponent's life difficult in the least bit, you deserve to lose. That's just the basic, you know, that's basic understanding. And so they talk about adversity, or they talk about this, and they talk about, you know, fragility, and they talk about being, you know, a little late to the pucks and things of that nature. Sure, they might be all those things. But you know what can remedy that? A better effort and a commitment to making things more difficult for their opponent. And that's just what it boils down to. They make it's too easy to play against this team. Remember with the season where we played where the Jets lost to the Ducks in the first round, the first time they made the playoffs? You know, at least that team, you know, lacking in talent that it was or not
those
quite
games
ready.
Were close.
Those games were Jets, close. Yeah. And they had an identity that year.
They were
hitting absolutely
the first
everything. Yeah. They hit everything that moved.
But they're not constructed like that. And we talked about that. Well, we've talked about the myth of the Winnipeg Jets being big, physical, heavy team. I mean,
they're soft.
And the joke is that, you know, when you listen to broadcasts of teams that don't face the Jets very often, they talk about that because for whatever reason, 3, 4, 5 years later, that myth is still surrounding this team. But they're not that team anymore. They're not constructed that way. That's not the way they are built. So, but Drew, you're not going to make – look, Christian Vesalainen isn't going to suddenly become a checking, you know
– he's not going to become Keith Primo.
No.
Neither is Evgeny Svechnikov.
You don't need every player to play like that. And you're not exactly right. You're not going to change what they are as players. You drafted Christian Vesalainen because you thought he had goal scoring and offensive talent. And you signed Evgeny Svechnikov for the same reason. You didn't sign those guys or draft those guys to expect them to all of a sudden, you know, be bruisers and grinders. I get that. But what you need then when things aren't going well is you need the guys who are those kinds of players to go and be those kinds of players.
What about the speed? Drew, the Jets look slow tonight. Like, you're missing Ehlers. And yes, Kyle Connor is a fast player and Mark Scheifele is a skater. And, you know, the Jets have some speedy players. They have looked like a slower team that, yes. So they're easy to play against, and they're also not, you know, a team that you particularly have to worry about burning you on transition.
Well, right? And that's how they're built. That's how they're allegedly built, as a team that's going to beat you in transition and a team that's going to beat you off the rush. But, you know, you just don't, how many times do the Jets hit the opponent's blue line with speed? Or how many times do they transition up the ice and move the puck up the ice in a dangerous manner? Not very often. Usually it's, they're still more, it's bizarre. They still play more of a dump and chase game when they're allegedly built to be an off the rush team. So it's like the way they're built versus the way they play don't match up. And so then you wonder, of course, why they don't succeed. Well, they don't succeed because you don't play allegedly a style that is how you're expecting to win games.
I honestly don't really know what style they're playing these days.
Agreed. Agreed.
I don't know. Like, I think we saw it earlier in the season. Like, there's no doubt that this is a talented group. That's not what we're saying. We're not, shitting all over the Jets right now. I mean, it might seem like we are, but I don't think anybody at the beginning of the season, boys, saw this coming. I don't think anybody thought that the Jets were going to go 82-0, but I don't think that anybody saw, the Jets are behind the Canucks right now. They just got defeated 5-1 with their fourth string goaltender. And again, I'm not taking any away from Spencer Martin, but when you're in a desperation situation, you're making Spencer Martin look like Dominic Hasek. Like, it's really tough. Like I said, we've been doing the show in a long time and we've covered many variations and permutations of the Jets, right? Like, you go back to 2015, like you said, Drew, first time the Jets made the playoffs. There were some bad teams in the, 2011, 2014 vintage of the Jets. But now you can almost sum up the Jets like they're a really good team that is playing a style and a way that just doesn't match up with the talent level, even with Ehlers and Morrissey and others out of the lineup.
8-13-4 since they were 9-3-3. I don't think I need to tell anybody in the chat that winning 8 games and losing 13 in regulation and losing 4 in overtime is a bad record, but that's where the Jets are since they went 9-3-3 is 8-13-4, now 17-16-7 on the season after tonight's 5-1.
It's like a below .400 winning percentage.
It's a pretty shitty, it's pretty shitty. There's not many other words you can use for that. Ezzy, tough duck, hardest hitting comment. What do you got for tonight?
Yeah, we're gonna give it to Steve B. I love this comment. I mean, there were a lot of good comments. We appreciate all the comments. We appreciate everyone watching. I mean, I don't think this is fun right now. It's minus 35 outside, and we're looking for the Winnipeg Jets to brighten our spirits and get out of this losing streak. So we're all in this together. So the Jets will win eventually. I know it doesn't seem like they will, but Steve B. Wheeler windows, you can see optimism out on sunny days. Drew's got it up there. Wheeler is more like a door of a cellar that Ted Bundy owns. I just thought that was funny. I think we're all Married with Children fans, so Steve B, love it. Thanks for the comment.
Ted Bundy is, Ezzy, that's the serial killer. Sorry. Ted Bundy.
Bundy, you're thinking Al Bundy there.
This is closer to a Silence of the Lambs reference, where you put the lotion in the basket.
Yeah.
I mean, I was wondering why you gave it to the serial killer reference.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know. It's late. I've been up. Drew, I'm up with the kids really early. So anyways, it was still a good comment. Steve B, send me an email, ezra@aleutor.com. Just send me your mailing address, and then the good folks at Tough Duck will send you a toque.
There you go, Steve B. Congratulations. You're the winner of the Tough Duck Hardest Hitting Comment. Send Ezzy that email, or you can slide into his DMs at ICEzzyG, and we'll hook you up with that toque, courtesy of our friends at Tough Duck, sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hardest Hitting Comment on the post-game show. Want to also say a big thank you to the rest of our sponsors. They make this show a possibility. They make the website a possibility, and they make Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show a possibility. That's our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and Grid Park. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey.
Saturday morning, 9 a.m., the Illegal Curve Hockey Show back here on our YouTube channel. We'll get you set for that afternoon's contest against the St. Louis Blues. We'll look back at the week that was for the Jets. We'll look ahead to the game against Philly, and it's the halfway mark of the season. So we'll be sure to be giving out some grades and who's meeting our expectations and who's below our expectations after the halfway mark. Here's a spoiler alert. Very few people are meeting or exceeding our expectations. Join us then.
I'll be giving Pierre-Luc Dubois plus one. Shocker.
There you go. He's one of the few, certainly.
I have a question. Did we just go an hour and 5 minutes and you managed to not talk about the NHL debut of a player tonight?
I did. We can talk about Johnny Kovacevic on we talked about him in that fact that
not really.
Dave Lowry didn't really use him in the way we would have.
Drew, I'm not sure. I'm not going to joke. I think your performance is as bad as the Jets so far.
That's fine. That's fair enough, Dave. I can accept your criticism. I prefer it to be a little bit more of constructive criticism, but all things being equal.
I was pretty constructive. I told you what you
could have. Deconstructive.
I told you what you should have brought up and you didn't.
Fair enough. I guess do you want to talk about it? By all means. I'm not going. I don't have the conch. I'll give that to you, Lord of the Flies there, Piggy.
Yes, I will take the conch. Thank you very much. Let's put Drew on mute and I will just go with, no, I mean, look, I just think it was a nice feather in his cap. I happened to be walking in to Canada Life Center at the exact same time as his parents and his brother. And it was the only indication, of course, was that because everybody wears masks, was that his brother was wearing a Merrimack College, of course, where he went to play hockey. So I knew that. I said, are you the Kovacevic family? And of course they were. And so I had a nice chat with them before the game as they were walking in to see their seats, and really nice family. And really, I mean, obviously the result isn't great, but it, you know, a real kind of a cool moment to share with them, to be able to see the excitement that they were feeling for their brother slash son. And the you know, of course, his sister's in New Zealand, so she was FaceTiming in with the family, watching the.
Of course, we all know that Johnny Kovacevic's sister lives in New Zealand, Dave.
They talked about it multiple times on the broadcast, Ezzy. Yeah, multiple.
Everybody
times
knows that.
Well, I'm saying for those who don't know, I'm sharing that information with them. But the point is that it was a nice moment for the 2017 third rounder, and it was a nice moment for his family to be able to get to Winnipeg and witness their son play in his first NHL game.
There you go. Well said, Dave. And we'll talk more about the Jets young defenseman on Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
And we'll also talk about Evander Kane's beef with O-Dog.
I missed that. You'll have to fill me in on Saturday because I missed that one, but I'm sure it'll be entertaining nonetheless. Good thing that Evander's focused on the important things in life, exactly. Feuding with retired players as opposed to, resurrecting his career with the Edmonton Oilers.
He's going to save the Oilers, Drew. Just wait.
He can play goal. He can do anything. He can do anything in his power, I guess. In any event, Saturday morning, 9 a.m. back here on our YouTube channel. Saturday afternoon after the Jets and the Blues. It's a busy Saturday upcoming for us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks to everybody for joining us. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button on your way out. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Subscribe to us via podcast. That way you'll never miss an episode of Illegal Curve Hockey. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m. We wish you good night and good luck, and thanks for watching the Illegal Curve post-game show.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.